Okay, I can't. There were two stories brought up in the SRN news that I just have to comment on. And we do have both Jim back and we have Don on the line. The first is that you've got the Islamic State perpetrating genocide against the Iraqi population. Now, if it's the Islamic State, there's a clue there, it's the Islamic State that is perpetrating the genocide. What religion is responsible for the genocide? Scott?
Muslims?
The Hindus, right?
It's the Hindus.
Okay, the Hindus. I know. It was a trick question, and I just wanted to make sure you were on your toes. It's the Hindus that are responsible. Yeah, they're sneaky, those Hindus. Either that, it could be the Jedi Masters of as a legacy of the Zoroastrian religion. But I'm going to go with Islam, stupid.
Jedis are ruining the empire.
What do you think the... Okay, then the big deal was that the cash-strapped Philadelphia school district's having a big problem. What do you think the likelihood is that the Philadelphia school system has a smaller budget today than it had 10 years ago?
None. There's no chance. There's absolutely no chance.
No. So they're spending too much money on teacher and administrative salaries is the problem because of the union that's involved. Before we go to Don, Jim, you were kind enough to hang through the break and call back on a different telephone. And so I'd like to have you share your kind of a closing insight. You asked a question about leadership. I made a comment on it, and then we're going to move on to other issues. But I want to give you the chance for a closing comment on Ferguson, north of St. Louis, Missouri.
I didn't get to hear what you
said. What I basically said, Jim, was that as it relates to us against them, if it's us against them and we're arming them, then we should not have police, because they're going to make it us against them, then they're counterproductive. If they're not serving and protecting us, but instead are turning against us, then they're counterproductive. And the other issue is we went through the leadership shown by the police chief, which was abysmal, and the training of his officers, which was abysmal, and why he should be fired and fired immediately. And we compared it to the man who's the head of the Missouri Highway Patrol, and how he walked into that community without a gas mask, without a helmet, without a gun, without a flak jacket, and calmed things right down.
Okay, yeah, he's leading by example. Okay,
correct.
So, I mean, you have two leadership styles predominantly.
Right.
You have
right.
lead by example, or a lead by authoritative rule.
Right.
Now, if you lead by example, you do it in public view. You do it, mm-hmm. and your soldiers see it. The populace
right.
sees it, and
right.
you are setting an example.
Right.
My soldiers will do as I do
right.
because I'm doing it. If it's lead by authority, then you absolutely have to have us against them mentality, because your soldiers will follow you and look to you because you're the authority. And you instill that us against them mentality.
Yeah, and it's clear that the police chief in Ferguson is a – an authorized figure that likes to stand behind the bully pulpit, and he has made every possible wrong decision along the way.
Unfortunately, that leadership style comes from fear. So
yes, it does.
Yeah. So
yes, command and control. It's a leadership style that is used in most militaries, and it's the antithesis of what God envisions. He wants us to have no hierarchy, but the imposed leadership hierarchy that exists, for example, in the Roman Catholic and Eastern Orthodox churches and in all militaries and in all police departments, that's the antithesis of what God wants. In fact, when Yosha is speaking out against the Nicolaitans in the open letter to the Ephesians, he is denouncing them, and their most notable aspect of the Nicolaitans was that they had a hierarchical structure. God's himself leads by example. God could claim, I have the ultimate authority, and I can tell you what to do, but he instead leads by example. It's a vastly superior form of leadership.
Right, but how many people look to him? So Good luck.
Very few. There's very few, but that's one of the many reasons I suspect that both of us have fallen in love with Yanoa, is that he could just sit behind the big rostrum on the ultimate throne and say, "I'm God. You're going to do what I say because I'm God." That's the highest title in the universe, but that's not his style. He gets down on his knees to lift us up. He walked the walk from Egypt to the Promised Land with his children. He paved the way for us to resolve the issues that we have in our lives so that we could camp out with him. He leads by example.
He does. I come at it from a little different point of view. I know you don't like chain of command. You don't like authority.
No, I don't.
And whatnot. I don't mind chain of command. It all depends upon who's at the head of the chain. And, you know, who are the individual links? And unfortunately, they're men in modern governments and religious organizations.
Yeah. And I don't think I've ever witnessed a chain of command where I was impressed with the head of the command structure. So I'm not fond of it. You're right. And I understand that in some businesses, chairman of the board, CEO, president, vice presidents of various levels has an effect. But I can also tell you, having been in business and having seen the corruption at those various levels and the nature of human behavior within organizations like that, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not a fan of chain of command.
Well, the chain of command that I really enjoy or embrace is Yada's at the head, and the individual links. This is just how I envision. The individual links are his Malacca. And all the weak links chose to leave, which is fine. You get rid of the links that have a problem in their metallurgy. You reform your chain with stronger, the best links, and your chain is exponentially stronger.
Well, I'm glad what you said is that you didn't add humankind, because in humankind there is no authority from Yahweh to us. Yahweh wants us to sit beside him, walk beside him, sit together with him on his throne. But what you did is you compared the chain of command of Yahweh in command of the Malach, which are his spiritual envoys and messengers. And you are correct. That is a command and control, non-free will environment. And Yahweh is absolutely in command of them. And there are at least three that we know of leaders within that chain of command, within the Malach as well. The two most famous, Gabriel would be one. Michael is another, and at one time Satan was, and that was a bad medal in that in that link of the chain. But you are right; that is a command. That is a command and control regimen with a perfect individual in command. But the individual that is perfect at command. In his most important command, chose to command by doing through example. And that's with humankind. He only leads by example with humankind. He does not lead from legitimate authority.
And he's consistent with it, his example. I mean, even in heaven. I realize you've said that the Malach doesn't really have a choice necessarily.
They don't. It's command and control.
But still, read into it. There was a choice, even in heaven.
Yeah.
Those that left had a choice.
There was a rebellion, That's where you can have a rebellion in the U.S. military, too. You have no free will in the U.S. military. You can't choose where you want to go and what you want to do and what orders you want to follow and don't want to follow and all of that sort of things. There's no free will in the U.S. military, but you can rebel. But there's an immediate consequence of rebellion, and that's what the case with Satan. I want to correct one thing that I said go ahead.
He is consistent and he is fair.
Yeah, correct.
He is consistent and he is fair. Even in heaven, he is consistent and he is fair.
Right.
Therefore, he
is fair. That's what I would like to say is that while with his family, there is no command and control. He does not cop a title as it relates to his family. He is the servant as it relates to his family, as are all loving parents. However, if you choose to oppose him, then he will impose his ultimate authority. He becomes the ultimate judge. So if you choose to oppose him, then you will find him using legitimate authority as creator and judge.
But isn't that fair?
Absolutely. Totally and completely. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't relate to legitimate authority because I don't relate to him under the auspices of legitimate authority. I relate to him as my father and my friend.
Absolutely, yes. But there is an example that he has shown. It does exist. It is real.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We don't necessarily operate under it, but we can observe it. We can glean some information
sure.
from it.
Sure.
We can strive towards that. We'll never achieve it, but it's an example that we can use.
Yeah. I think for us, the best example is to lead by example. Even when I was head of fairly large companies with thousands of employees that were worth, some even the billions of dollars, I always tried to lead by example. I was the first one in. Every day I was the last one to leave. I was always the person working the hardest to advance the goals of the company. And when there wasn't enough money to make payroll, I dug into my own pocket to make payroll. And for years, I did not even take a salary so that I could provide a salary for others, leading by example.
But how much more respect from those that you were supervising did you
have? Actually, the problem in today's world is that people don't respect that which is the approach that I took, which I think is the approach that Yahweh takes. Now, I'm not comparing myself to him, obviously, but that approach is not something that people respect today. And so in today's world, you're looked at as crazy when you take that approach, and you find people trying to undermine you. And that's why I will never go back into business. I found the character of those that I led to be so deficient, I will never do it again. The answer to your question should have been respect, just as we respect Yahweh for leading by example, for being so generous in the way that he leads. But that's not the way people respond today. People are.
When I've had to lead by example, you're right to a large extent because they see me as an asset. I'm working so much harder to help them if they want to keep me around.
Yeah, some do. And at one time in my life when I led that way, over 80% of those that I led that way saw it as you've just described it. By my last business, 80% were trying to undermine everything that I was working. Welcome back to Shattering This. Well, now that I've made an entire program of getting to admit that I was wrong, even having Jim, who I just love when he calls in, he's a very smart guy, present correctly an aspect of Yahweh's nature where he does use legitimate authority. We now have one of my favorite people, Don, on the line. And I suppose, Don, you're going to show that I was wrong on something else.
No.
Didn't I misrepresent what was on your site and what was on Richard's site? Bless Yahweh and YHWH-QRA.com.
That is partially correct.
Okay. So let's correct the record. Let's
Richard,
talk about what's on those sites.
Richard, first of all, I just got in on the last of this, so you must have had a popcorn day on the with the news, did you?
Oh, yes. We were talking about what happened in Ferguson, Missouri, where I spoke favorably of the young man that was killed, and it turns out he was a thug.
Well,
so,
it turns out
he was a thug. And I think as well as anybody that I'm just having fun with this in the sense that I actually enjoy saying things that I've subsequently learned are wrong. Because if you don't learn along the way that something you held true is wrong, then you're never growing. You're never moving closer to the truth. You, for example, have been wrong a couple of times in your life.
Just a little bit.
You were an elder in the Seventh Day Adventist Church, and you had a chance to say, "Oops, I was wrong."
Yeah, I was a leader of the youth group there for many, many years. I want to endorse Richard's site.
Okay. BlessYahweh.com.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Frank also, his site is wonderful for resources.
Right. PowerOnHigh.com.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to promote that for resources, it is tremendous.
So now, he has links to the various interlinears and Hebrew dictionaries, as well as articles and studies that just help provide somebody who is actively interested in coming to know who Yahweh is and understand the covenant, understand his testimony. The PowerOnHigh.com website is very rich in providing tools.
Tremendous. And where I heard the archives of your other Wednesday show, I said I have to call in because you were promoting my particular site with all of the audio of ITG and the others.
Mm-hmm.
All I have ever tried to do on my site was promote the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite a while I had to study questioning Paul. And then I realized I could add that to the Dead Sea Scrolls because it is a very, very understanding, rich translation of the Greek.
Mm-hmm.
And so I added Questioning Paul to my website. I had to expand my website tremendously because it is so big. Now, if I got enough requests, I do have audio of about 90% of all of your works. The only reason it's not 100% is you, darn it.
He's changing
everything.
Yeah. When I learned that I've said something that is not wholly accurate, I have this desire to correct the record, which is just perfect for this. For example, in my first edition of Writing Questioning Paul, I didn't cite the most important passage that there is related to Paul, which is Habakkuk, the first and second chapter. I omitted it. So now I need to add that because I've learned that's the single most relevant comment in the universe relative to Paul. Another example is that in my first writing of Questioning Paul, I had not come to realize that the covenant had not yet been renewed, therefore there cannot be a New Testament or a renewed covenant. And so once you learn that, your motivation is to go back and to correct the record and to correct the mistake. When I wrote Questioning Paul, I had not done the systematic, and I took weeks to do this, where I looked at every single Hebrew word and how they were written and pronounced. And after doing an exhaustive study of every Hebrew word and how they're written and pronounced, it became obvious to me that Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh, the four letters that comprise Yahweh's name, are pronounced Yahweh. And so I needed to go back and change that. So you're right. I made it very difficult for sites like you and for individuals like you and constantly trying to improve and make a more accurate and more complete version of each of these books. And for that, I do not apologize. We'll be back with Don and with Larry after the break. Welcome back to Shattering This. We have Don on the line and also Larry before we get to Don's presentation of exactly what is available on his site. Larry, it's been an interesting day.
Yeah, it has. One of the things I want to point out here is that most people, when they make a mistake, they don't honestly go back and republish a book.
No.
And, kudos to you for doing so. And I also want to point out that when we look at Chabawuk, mm-hmm. and we see what he said about Paul, and we know that the creator of the universe, Yahweh, is not kidding.
Mm-hmm.
He named him. He named all these things. Do you know, for all the people, all the we care, we're worried about what God wants and all this, they will not take the time to read it.
I know. It's just amazing.
The majority right. put that much thought into what they.
I guess if you want to remain ignorant, you never have to say I'm wrong. Now, personally, I actually like saying I'm wrong because I think it does several things. One is when you're willing to admit you're wrong based upon additional information or a more complete assessment of the information that's available. When you admit that you're wrong based upon what you've learned, it means that you're still about the process of learning. It means that you're rational, and that once you know something is different than what you previously stated, that you're always willing to go where the evidence and reason leads, which is the ultimate, I think, in credibility. I think you lose all credibility when you hang on to for example, if you continue to believe that Paul was an apostle inspired by God after reading Habakkuk 1 and 2, then you're being completely irrational. And the third thing is that by being willing to admit, you know, I was wrong about that, and here's the some evidence and reason that leads us into to a different conclusion, is that, you know, having worked with me on particularly on the Shabbat show, which we'll do this evening, that I don't want anybody to follow me. I don't claim to be relevant. I'm never, ever telling anybody, you ought to believe me, you ought to follow me. This has always been about looking past me as a flawed implement who just happens to enjoy what Yahweh has to say and is focused on trying to correctly and accurately translate it and then think about it and then share what he says and what it means to our daily lives. And so from that perspective, I've always viewed myself as irrelevant, and showing that I'm make mistakes is, I think, helpful in that regard.
Well, it's helpful to understand, too, that it's the path of the Torah that makes us set apart or kodesh. It's not our personal habits.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Sadly, religion teaches the opposite of that, that you earn your salvation because of your purity of heart and what you believe and your faith in the unknown and all those things. And
second
the
to Don, who's on the religion. Yeah, second to Don, who's on the other line right here, Larry, isn't the fellow named Dode, who we know is David, isn't he the absolutely most loved human of all time?
Absolutely.
And
no doubt about it.
Did Dode have some flaws in his behavior?
Yeah. Some pretty, you know, from a worldly perspective, some pretty despicable things.
Right.
Really.
So, just proving your point that Yah's way that Yah goes about valuing individuals and loving individuals has absolutely nothing to do with their behavior and having all to do with their attitude.
Yeah, it's all to do. They either want to know him or they don't want to know him. They get to know him or they don't. I've put it to people like this. If you know, you're sitting down eating a dinner and there's an earthquake that kills 100,000 people over in Turkey, you go, wow, that's too bad. But, you know, you continue, you eat your dinner.
Yeah, right.
On the other hand, if there's an earthquake and you know it's in a place where your son happens to be.
Right.
You're
going to finish your dinner.
Stop eating right there, and you're going to go do something about it.
Right.
And being known is enough. That's my point here.
Right. And, yes.
You know, once you're known, and Yahweh.
And Yahweh cares. At that point, Yahweh cares. Yeah.
There you go.
Absolutely. We're staying on the line, Larry. We're talking to Don about correcting the message in terms of what is available on his website. So, for example, right now, if I wanted to read an introduction to God and I wanted to download an audio version of volumes of an introduction to God on your YHWH-QRA website, Don, could I do so?
No. I have it, but the only reason I haven't endeavored to put it up is I'm just beginning to change my attitude towards sticking 100% to the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had such a tremendous response to questioning Paul that I'm questioning my decision is ITG is, I think, as I explained to Marcia, it is the same as an ice pick. Questioning Paul is an ice pick. If you want to attack a block of ice, you're not going to do it with a sledgehammer. That ain't going to get you nowhere.
Yep.
But if you use an ice pick, I can chip out whatever you want with an ice pick in a very short time.
Right.
And I think Introduction to God, I would be willing to put up in my resources.
Mm-hmm.
I could do that. And I have Introduction to God in audio form that I did for me. Okay. It would take me a week or two to edit in your changes and make my audio equal to the PDF file, which is very difficult to do. It's extremely time-consuming. Every page is probably between a half an hour and 45 minutes of carefully reading and then editing.
And it's 1,200 pages.
1,200 pages, and to Questioning Paul right now is 27 and a half hours of MP3 files.
Right, because it's over 1,000 pages. The rewrite of it's like 1,200 pages.
Yes, I'm going to have to make
We took a lot of hammers on that ice pick. On the new version of Questioning Paul. Yada Yada, though, is like 2,500 pages long. And I think
right.
You probably also have the audio for Yada Yada.
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do. But it's for me only.
Okay. The issue in terms of Dead Sea Scrolls versus these other books, so that our listeners know, any time that we have an extant reference, stamp just means available, reference from the Dead Sea Scrolls, I translate from the Dead Sea Scrolls. In the case of Paul,
right.
I translate from the earliest 69 manuscripts that we have, primarily parchment 46, that was written within 50 years of Paul having authored his letter to the Galatians. And so,
That's right.
Probably within 20 to 30 years of him having authored his letter to the Romans. So, Questioning Paul is based on the oldest manuscripts. Yada Yada, an Introduction to God, is based upon the Qumran Scrolls, where we have an extant passage from the Qumran Scrolls. But while every book that's part of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that I cite from is verified in the Qumran Scrolls, there's only one where the entirety of the book is available, and that's Yada Yada. So we do have to refer to the Masoretic and correct the Masoretic for what we have learned in certain places. For example, I'm writing a whole volume now on the Daniel. And there's much of Daniel that's available in the Qumran Scrolls. There's like 8 or 9 Daniel manuscripts. But we don't have the whole thing. There's even by putting the 9 manuscripts together, we still don't have the entire book. So,
well, my point is I'm loosening up my own restrictions for what I set out to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ITG, I have had such a tremendous response to Questioning Paul. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
It's just unbelievable the response that I've gotten from Questioning Paul.
All around the world.
All over the world. Oh, yes, every continent, it's unbelievable.
I know when I originally published the first version of Questioning Paul and I had people around the world read it, what I found is there wasn't a single person who read Questioning Paul, even the shorter version, the 600-page version, from beginning to end, not a single person, even if they had been a devout Christian when they picked it up, that concluded that the evidence wasn't overwhelmingly against Paul, and 100% wrote me at the end of it and said, "We rejected Paul. We knew there was something wrong. Thank you for taking the time to verify this for us."
I've not had one single complaint.
Yeah.
Not one single complaint.
Yeah, I had three people that wrote me, didn't write me directly, wrote me indirectly. They, somebody had recommended that they read Questioning Paul. They got through the first three or four paragraphs and had a conniption fit, wrote them based on the three or four paragraphs, and it was passed on indirectly to me. But no one, having read the book, was left unconvinced that Paul was the ultimate scumbag and fraud.
Right. Well, like I've told you many, many times, religion is a very comfortable suit to put on.
Yeah, it is.
It's so comfortable to put on. And once you put it on, you don't want to take it off.
Yeah. Unless you're willing to go where the truth led. And that journey for you was when you started studying the Dead Sea Scrolls and found out that what they said was incompatible with the religion, very popular religion, of Seventh-day Adventists. And ultimately then you're confronted with a choice. Am I going to keep this comfortable suit on, even though I know it is false? Or am I going to take it off and have the courage to go where the words lead?
Yes.
And ultimately, you had the courage to go where the words lead. We're going to return with Larry and with Don after the commercial break, and we're going to see if we can encourage Don to put up audio for each of the books, since he has compiled it, because so many people are benefiting from the audio version around the world. Welcome back to Shatteringness. I'd like to invite all of you. I know Don is a frequent listener and participant. Larry is a co-host of the Shabbat program that we'll do this evening, depending on where you are around the West Coast. It's 4:30, East Coast 7:30 p.m. Every Friday evening, where we talk about the Torah and the fact that the Torah is Yahweh's way to guide and to teach us as a father would instruct his children. So, Don, the thing that I recognized, and I came to recognize this very early on through Prophet of Doom, and that's how I met Larry, was Larry read Prophet of Doom. His wife is from Persia, so he had a real interest in reading the book. But what I found is that the highest readership per capita of Prophet of Doom was not in the United States. It wasn't in Australia or New Zealand or in Great Britain or Ireland, where people spoke English. The highest per capita readership of Prophet of Doom was the country where Larry's wife comes from. From New Persia, Iran. And the reason for that is that they weren't reading it. They were listening to it. That's where the MP3 files were played the most often. And I find more people listened to Prophet of Doom because, you know, it's a 1,000-page book. It takes you 50 hours to read a 1,000-page book. But, you know, if they put it in their MP3 player, they could play it in their car as they were commuting back and forth to work. They could put it in an MP3 player and listen to it as they were fixing dinner or clearing the dishes. And so what you're doing when you make an audio version of these studies available is hugely increasing the not only the audience, the number of people who will choose to listen, but also the depth that to which they will listen, because we all have busy lives. It's easier to listen than it is to read. Larry, do you agree?
No, I do agree, and obviously it works because Shimon talked about people who got on the path because of words he had spoken to them.
Correct. Yeah, and how many words Yahweh is big into writing. I mean, there's no question about Yahweh's big into writing. But Yahweh did not just didn't say, I want you to read and observe by reading what he has written. He wants us to listen, which means we've got to recite it out loud to listen to him speak to us. So that verbal input is really important.
Yeah, and he wants us to understand it. That's
the
bigger
one of the things. Yeah, one of the things true, and it's also true. Larry, you're involved in a website where you're exchanging words with people, written words, and you confront religious people with Yahweh's testimony. When you're writing
yesterday, he was trained by the Messianic movement. Oh, we can't know Yahweh's name. We can't say it.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
That's right. But you can pronounce every other Hebrew word that uses the same 22 letters.
Can you say Torah?
Yeah, can you say Torah? Yeah, well, okay, well, that's the same same letter. Sorry. The difference, though, between verbal communication and written communication is with verbal communication, you can communicate tone. And with tone, you have attitude. You can say exactly the same thing, but have so much more meaning to those words with the resonance of the human voice and how it can communicate emotion and emphasis. You know, for example, my old dog is laying here on the floor, and I say, "You're such a bad dog." You know, if I say, "You're such a bad dog," and I say it in that kind of a way, she's going to wag her tail and come right up to me. Now, if I were to say exactly those same words, which I won't because I'll freak her out, but in a mean tone,
yeah,
you know, she's going to shake. And my friend Don here, that's, you know, he shares my commitment to the interaction. I mean, the dogs are a wonderful way for us to see loyalty and love and you know, mutual camaraderie and respect. And you would experience the same thing, wouldn't you, Don?
Oh, absolutely. Now, I'll tell you what, I will call in the show tonight, and I'll trust Skype because I'm getting down to my last 100 minutes on my cell phone. And let's discuss this tonight with Larry and some others, and I'll take your advice. And if I get disconnected, I'll call right back.
All right. So the purpose of your phone call today was to correct the record as to what currently is available on your site, because I misrepresented some of the things that were on your site, which is yhwh-qra.com, and also to emphasize the fact that Richard's site, which is blessyahweh.com, which has all of the archives of this and every program, and all by category, they're all depicted by what the subject matter is, that the blessyahweh.com site is truly wonderful and that there's outstanding tools available to you at the PowerOnHigh.com website.